Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Mairead Lavery joins us once again. Mairead, good afternoon to you.
I've been, the last four weddings we've been at, three of them have been humanist.
There you go. They're a thing now.
No, yeah. they really are a big thing. And you know, what kind of always strikes me about them is the mammies and the daddies and the aunties and sometimes even grannies, you know. And they all absolutely take it in their stride. And 20 years ago, the thought of it, my God,
horrified,
the country would have fallen apart. And, you know, people who, you know, families where the rosary would have been said every night and First Fridays and everything in that line. And absolutely able to take this on board, have a great day. And joyfully taken on board. It's not a begrudging taken on board because it's nothing as bad as a sour-faced nana sitting at the top table, unhappy with what's going on. So yeah, no, it's a huge change. It's a massive change.
And it's the one I was at one earlier in the year, and they got people to do, I suppose, what would be the humanist equivalent of prayers of the faithful, except people stood up and expressed sentiments. One person read out. Because one of the people getting married was huge into films and read out a series of lines from various films and TV shows. No, we didn't have to guess, no. And kind of threaded it together as a speech.
Oh, right,
but it actually was really moving, weirdly enough, because people recognised it and went, at certain points all the way through it.
That sounds like kind of the Quakers, the way, you know, they stand up when something occurs to them, and that's the way they conduct their services.
Yeah.
But look, isn't it just let live and let live, and, you know, as long as people, you know, don't be whacking each other or kind of fighting with each other.
Well, I know, exactly.
A grand world.
Yeah.
You're talking there about laws and the minutiae of laws. Have you any idea what the difference is between something that is labelled as vanilla flavour or vanilla flavoured? Right.
Well,
so
your ice cream,
is it vanilla flavour? Is that what's on the ingredient list, or is it vanilla flavoured? If it is vanilla flavour, that means it's synthetic vanilla.
Right.
It's not real vanilla. Vanilla is very expensive stuff. If it's vanilla flavoured, then... No, wait a minute. Yeah. If it's vanilla flavoured, that's right. If it's vanilla flavoured ice cream, then the vanilla has to come from real vanilla.
Right. Okay. And now, ED makes all the difference.
Now, how many people would spot that in terms of commissions of a EU trade thing? Vanilla at the moment, you know, it's in those pods. And, you know, nice ice cream, it's little black spots inside the ice cream that you often see. Particularly, say, the Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, it's little black spots, and you peel it off the pod and, you know, you add it to whatever you're cooking in. But it's been very expensive because I think there's a shortage or something of it. But anyway, that's why I'm coming to tell you about when is your ice cream not an ice cream.
Right. So if you go buy a block of ice cream and it says vanilla ice cream, that's probably vanilla flavour.
Well, you just need to check the back on the ingredients, the list of ingredients. Now, what I'm talking about here is a survey that was done by Which magazine over in the UK. I haven't had time, because I only saw this actually this morning, so I didn't have time to go down to the supermarket and check out what's on the labels of Irish. But an awful lot of the brands that are mentioned are actually available in Irish supermarkets.
Mm.
So, you know, I love a block of ice cream. You know, the Napolitanian one with the three flavours?
Yeah.
And I double wafer it.
Mm.
Nice big wedge, double wafer. You really good crunch with a double wafer.
Right, you put a wafer halfway
two wafers on either side.
Right,
really, really. That is just my heavenly treat on a Sunday night. So, so what would you think in your standard ice cream? It's there is made up of fresh milk, cream, egg yolks, sugar, and vanilla.
Mm.
Like you can understand it. And an awful lot of people have ice cream makers, or they make their own ice cream and they know what goes into it. And as I said, they're the little black spots. So far, so good. Now, the Which magazine, which is a well-known consumer magazine in the UK, they had a look at 24 popular ice creams. And they found that five of them contained no cream, no fresh milk and no vanilla. None whatsoever. Five of them. Another seven were missing at least one of these key ingredients. And that meant that just 50% of the ice creams that they checked out actually had what were listed as fresh milk, vanilla, cream in their ingredient list.
That's mad, isn't it? Isn't the ice cream, a lot of the ice cream now, has no cream, but it's cold,
no,
I suppose.
No, yeah, yeah. Well, it's you see, it's you're now talking about ice cream or dairy ice cream.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, the vegans are in now and, you know, they're, the regulations were changed in the UK and in Ireland, seemingly in 2015. I don't know what the reason was in the UK, but in Ireland, it was because the regulations that were determining what ice cream was. Because, you know, that's the other thing about all these trade talks that are going to be happening very soon. There's very specific definitions as to what ham is or what chicken is or anything. But what ice cream was, one of the definitions in the Irish law was that it must contain at least 10% sugar. And the regulations were dropped in order to avoid having this whole argument about sugar, or maybe it would decrease sugar. Now, why they just didn't reconstitute the menu or the recipe and say it must have at least less than 5% sugar instead of taking the regulation away altogether. So I don't know what the story is for the Irish ice cream, but if you don't add the traditional ingredients, so then what's in there instead? So cream and milk are often substituted with partially reconstituted dried skim milk, and in some cases, whey protein. Now, whey protein is getting a really good name. It used to be the stuff that after they took off the cheese, the wash that was left.
Yeah.
And it was fed to pigs. And, you know, an awful lot of dairy farmers had pigs and they lived on the whey. And whey powder now has got very upmarket because it's been used in all the protein drinks. Well, in a lot of them anyway. And so that's what it's used for, and that's what's going in instead. But the real thing that caught my eye on this, well, first of all, is check the label on your ice cream. What the ice creams that came out really well in this were Green and Black's, Ben and Jerry's, and Häagen-Dazs. And particularly Häagen-Dazs, it had 39% fresh cream, and you'd know it. You know, it is a very rich ice cream.
It's all the ones you'd expect, actually, because they're the more expensive ones.
Yeah. Now, in Ireland, I would imagine, I'd be very surprised if the likes of HB and whatever weren't full dairy.
Mm.
But have a good look at your ingredients list and understand the difference between vanilla flavour and vanilla flavoured. One is artificial and the other is the real deal.
That's mad, isn't it?
So there you go.
I wonder what they put in instead of the vanilla then.
There's a whole industry all over the world set up to kind of develop tastes or to develop ingredients that taste exactly like a meadow in springtime, lavender in the Alps, you know. So there's absolutely a huge industry involved in ingredients manufacture.
Rosemary in Malahide says the same applies to smoked salmon. Do you know the difference between Irish smoked and smoked Irish?
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
Irish smoked salmon is not necessarily Irish. It is smoked in Ireland. Whereas smoked Irish salmon is salmon that is Irish and smoked.
Right, but not necessarily smoked here.
Well, maybe not necessarily, but where else would they smoke it?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
you wouldn't catch it here. They wouldn't catch it and bring it up somewhere else.
No, because that's the unique selling point is that it's Irish.
Yeah.
But yeah, Irish smoked salmon and smoked Irish salmon. But I just thought that vanilla thing was amazing. You know, the difference between, and obviously if that applies to the likes of vanilla, then it must apply to other foods.
Mm.
So something that is flavour or if it's vanilla flavoured ice cream. So say it was lemon flavour ice cream. So then it's artificial lemon, is it? And if it's lemon flavoured, then it's the real deal. So anyway, need to understand your labels.
Tread very carefully because they did look this up. And the vanilla flavour ice cream is called Castoreum.
Right.
That's the chemical that for vanilla flavour.
Oh, right.
Brian at Wexford, and we did check this is true, says vanilla flavour comes from the secretions of the anal gland of the North American beaver. That's actually where vanilla flavour comes from.
Well, where that beaver hardly grows pods.
It's from a beaver's castor sacs. That's how they make the artificial vanilla.
Oh, is it? That's how they make the artificial stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other stuff
they have
is
loads of beavers in a factory and they're just squeezing them into a sack.
But the other stuff is like, it's about, they're about, 3/4 of a page in length, an A4 page in length, and you have to split them. and you take out all the little seeds.
Yeah.
Now, that's the real stuff. I mean, it's like a fruit or a vegetable.
That sounds very similar to the fake stuff, actually, as well. Let's move on, because it's kind of disgusting now. It's putting me off ever eating ice cream again. So, old farm buildings.
Yes, old farm buildings. Particular pet subject of mine, because we have a few of them and that badly need repair. And I have a husband who's kind of looking at them and saying, what are we ever going to do with them? What do you need to be doing anything with them for? Waste of money. But anyway, I think that this is a scheme. It's the DLAS, or the DLAS Traditional Farm Grant Scheme. And it has been oversubscribed every year. There's way more people with these old buildings. 340 applications in 2000, and this year only 60 projects supported. So it's for, you know, like yesterday now, for instance, I really have a great job. You know, I get to go to the loveliest of places. I was down in a place called Fancroft Garden and Mills, just outside Ross Gray on the Borough Road yesterday afternoon. Mm. I was doing a piece on magnificent gardens down there that Irene and Marcus Sweeney have. But they also have this like huge mill, working mill that's creating flour. Making wow. flour. They're making semolina, white flour and brown flour down there. And they've restored it, put in 90 windows, sash windows into this, like, I don't know, is it a six-storey mill? I can't remember.
Who wants exactly to clean what. That?
Yeah, but it's amazing. And they reconstituted the mill, and the work that's been done on putting this industrial building dating back to the 1700s back into use. Back into use. Mm. And they were able to get the Germans over who'd put in the original, or who'd I think they had their original mill wheel had come from there. And they were able, you know, the company still existed and they knew exactly what they had to do to restore it. So, you know, it's a project like that. Now, that wouldn't fit in. That's in a different category. But people have lovely old stone, cut stone buildings, proper old blue banger slated roofs, nice piers and gates. A lot of them are in disrepair. And they're of no real benefit to anyone. Like, you know, there's very few fellas and women have, for that matter, have the money to turn them into, you know, B&Bs or self-catering or something like that. And it costs a fortune to do that. But they just want to get the roof back on them, and they want to put doors on them, and they want to kind of, you know, tidy up the stonework and all of that. So anyway, there's grants varying from 4,000 to 25,000. Maximum is 25,000. And you can't get any more than 75% of the cost of the work. So that's what the scheme is about. And for farm outbuildings, for roofs, walls, structural repairs, windows and doors, all of them apply. You can also get them to apply for historic yard surfaces. Now, I know a few places where you go in now and the yard is all cobbled.
Yeah.
Because it had been covered over maybe in concrete, or, you know, it had been covered over in maybe a generation of muck that had never properly come off it. And the yards are now clear and it's all cobblestoned. So even getting kind of that sort of stuff repaired. So, as I said, yeah, gate pillars and gates. Going around the country, you know, just have a look at the kind of different gates. There were iron gates made in the 1800s. That'll be here in the third millennium.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
This is the third millennium, isn't it? Is it? This is 2,000 years. Well, I mean,
correct it.
You could not. There's not a smidgen of rust on them. They're unbelievable gates. They might have a broken panel in them, or, you know, a tractor might have run into them and bent them or something like that. And to get those kind of things repaired. And if you just look around you when you're down the countryside, you'd see these absolutely everywhere.
And to get the grant for the farm, do the buildings still have to be used for the farm, or could it be put to any use?
Well, I mean, they're generally, the money, the kind of money we're talking about here, up to an absolute maximum of 25,000. It's about repair and retain and preserve the building. And, you know, they'd be used for storage, they'd be used for the pet lambs, the dog can sleep in there. You know, there's a whole pile of things you could do with them. But this is really just for farm work. And often, of course, don't you know, like, you know, there's a lot of bits and pieces you have to do to apply for it. Now, it's pretty complicated as ever.
Isn't it always?
But what generally happens is, of course, that people start doing a job like this. They estimate it's going to cost 10 grand, maybe. They'll get a percentage of that, up maximum 75% of that for a grant. And then, of course, they'll go and find another 10 grand's work that has to be done to be able to complete the first 10 grand's work.
Yeah.
Because something else is rotten further back, or, you know, the stonework isn't as good as they thought it is. And when they go and put a poker in it, it starts to crumble. So, you know, people are prepared to do even more work, generally speaking, once they get the push with the grant. But there's it's open and it watch out for it. It's on the National Heritage Council. They are part of the grant givers in it because they're involved in the project afterwards. So if you keep checking the Heritage Council website, you'll get the updates.
Good tip there. Mairead Lavery, thanks a million for coming in to us. Mairead Lavery there from the Farmers Journal. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.